I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, but that doesn't matter because the sun is shining in here because we've got a great weekend of football to talk about. Real Madrid coming from behind at the end of Valencia. Last-minute winner for Paris Saint-Germain. A buzzer-beating penalty that wasn't and was missed by West Ham, which helps preserve United's win. Juventus, four games without a victory to start the season. Not good. But let's start in North London, where Chelsea traveled to take on Spurs. Chelsea go on. They win 3-0. Mark Ogden joins us, in case you hadn't noticed, by the sudden cheeriness. You know the old cliche, a game of two halves? Tuchel certainly seemed to think it was. Chelsea's goals came in the second half.
Well, yeah, I think Chelsea dominated the first half as well. For me, there was never going to be anything other than a Chelsea win. I thought that Tottenham were poor. I think they're very kind of uninspiring with a Nuno. I just felt that at some point Chelsea would score, and it finished 3-0. It could have been 6. I mean, we had goal line clearances. We had easy chances missed by Werner. Chelsea were dominant. I think we saw the gulf yesterday between, you know, the top four and the rest, and it's a big gulf. But then, you know, Chelsea haven't been great, but they could still have scored 5 or 6.
Well, Chelsea haven't been great. I thought, well, Jules, we've talked about this before. I thought Chelsea were poor against Villa, even though they won 3-0.
Yeah,
I don't think they did anything special against Zenit, and they won 1-0.
I agree.
And yeah, they might have had the upper hand, but I thought Spurs held their own in the first half for 45 minutes. Then N'Golo Kanté comes on. I don't know if that changed the game, or was it simply the fact that at some point Chelsea were going to score? And incidentally, when they did, it was also the deflected goal and whatever.
I think the first goal on set piece as well. I mean, why is Dele Alli marking Thiago Silva? I don't understand. And then you've got Kane and Dyer in zonal marking, so they don't pick anyone, they're just in their zone. And then Dele is on Thiago Silva, who is one of the best headers of the ball in the Premier League. I don't understand why you don't swap Dele Alli and Dyer, for example, and Dyer is marking Thiago Silva. But I think that goal changes the dynamic after the break as well. Conte coming on, I think, has helped, and that change of formation from Chelsea helped. But after that, that's no reason why Spurs crumbled completely, apart from maybe the fact that they had to play then to go and get that goal, which in the first half, they played long to bypass the midfield and were very aggressive and physical. And I think one way of causing trouble to this Chelsea team is that if you're in their face and if you're very physical, and that's what Spurs do. But apart from that, I'm not sure right now this Spurs team can do other than just that.
Okay, I'm going to stick up for Nuno for a second because, in his defense, he had, Tanganga suspended, whatever, but he had Dyer coming back from injury. He had, obviously, Lo Celso and Romero just returned. Somebody I'm forgetting is missing in the middle, was missing in the middle of the park. He played a lineup which, to me, didn't look to be set up to be all physical and defensive, because you had the front three, you had Ndombele and Ali, who, you know, let's face it, they're not defensive midfielders, right? They went for it. What could he have done differently, apart from Jules' set-piece marking points?
I'm not sure he could have done much differently.
And within that, can you talk about Kane, too? Because it looked like, I couldn't quite understand where he was, but it looked at times like Hongmin Son was playing center forward.
It's not. And it looked like it was.
And Kane was like a spare midfielder.
Kane and Lo Celso were two inverted number 10s, basically, playing inside. Well, that's what it was.
I think Kane, it was just his frustration and not getting much of the ball. I think he went looking for the ball because he was frustrated at the lack of service. You know, that's what all good strikers do when they're looking for an opportunity. They get frustrated and they drop deep. On Nuno, I don't think he could have done much more, but I think the issue with Nuno is that I don't think the players are really buying into him. I think if you're a Tottenham player, you've had a downgrade from the previous manager, whether they liked him or not, he's a downgrade.
You're a big Ryan Mason fan, huh?
Well, yeah. How does Nuno inspire that team? They've come back from the summer break knowing that the best player wants to leave. Now, he stayed, but I'm sure Harry Kane would be thinking that I've come back to Tottenham and they've brought in Nuno, who had an average season at Wolves last year. They've really, really messed up the appointment of a manager. They went for the big names, Pochettino, for Conte. People at the club, I'm told, wanted Graham Potter to start, rip it up and start again. And then they don't be Nuno, who, if you're a Tottenham player, privately, do you think that Nuno is going to make you a better player? Are you looking at his record at Wolves thinking, this guy's going to make me a better player, us a better team? I just don't see it. And I think the players are probably looking at Nuno thinking, I'm not very inspired by this. You know, in many ways, it's a bit like when Man United appointed David Moyes. The players are looking at the guy on the touchline thinking, I just don't buy into him at all. Just don't think he's good enough.
I want to get more into the Nuno argument. I do want to say this, though, before we go on. Hey, Jules, this stuff about, oh, well, the players need an inspiring manager. I don't want excuses. You're playing in the Premier League. You're paid a lot of people. You're playing in one of the most inspiring stadiums in the ground.
Yeah.
I appreciate what you're saying, Augie, and we will talk more about it. That cannot be an excuse
you.
For certain performances.
I agree.
Yeah, but look at Chelsea. Look at the difference that Tuchel has made since replacing Frank Lampard. A coach that knows what he's doing, has got a track record, is strong in his beliefs, the players buy into it, and look at Chelsea. They've won the Champions League and they're one of the favourites of the Premier League. Go back 9 months, that same squad, literally the same squad, was drifting along under Frank Lampard because they didn't buy into Frank Lampard. And I think that at Tottenham, it's the same thing with Nuno.
Sorry if I jump in, right? But I think there's an important difference here, which is that, first of all, when Tuchel arrived, there were certainly some Chelsea players who were happy that Lampard was gone, and some Chelsea players who had worked with Tuchel before. But equally, I think the rank-and-file Chelsea player was like, ooh, who is this guy? Oh, this is the dude who, yeah, he reached the Champions League final, but he's just been sacked by Paris Saint-Germain.
Do you think
where
really?
You have to be...
I understand it from
the Chelsea end. It's not like Tuchel came in with this aura where all of a sudden Pep Guardiola had rolled into town.
No,
I think Tuchel won the players over with the way he worked.
Yeah, now, from day one.
From day one.
Yeah.
Now, okay, but fine. But Nuno is in a slightly different situation because Tuchel had all the players from day one. Nuno, you had signings that were made late. You had the whole Kane nonsense.
He's got
compare him with Tuchel straight away isn't necessarily fair.
If you're a big six club, you should be an elite player. Elite players need elite coaches. And I think you can tell when a squad of players aren't buying into the coach. Nuno at Tottenham reminds me a little bit of David Moyes at Man United. You can just sense that the players are looking at him thinking, this guy is not at our level. He's not at the level of this club. And it permeates through the squad. Whereas at Chelsea with Tuchel, I think even though what you're saying is he came having been sacked at the PSG, he still had a track record of, you know, being one of Europe's elite coaches, highly rated coaches, worked with top players in the past. I think the Chelsea players would have known that this guy was a top coach. Nuno, you know, I really don't know what he's done to earn the Tottenham job.
It was not ferocious anyway. But Nuno has a plan. Like Tuchel had a plan when he arrived at Chelsea. It's just a different plan. He's got a different philosophy. They're going to be hardworking, very well drilled, well structured. Whether you like it or not, this is what he does. He's not going to change this team into playing amazing one-touch football and creating overloads on the wings. What he does. But I spoke to Dele Alli after the game and he said, you know, people cannot expect a quick fix to our team and that things are going to come back very quickly to where we were before, he said, just because we won the first three games of the season. That was misleading, those first three games. The City performance is a good collective, solid strength, you know, in inspired and with a lot of hard performance.
Isn't that kind of language? It's almost like players looking for excuses. You know, we've got a new manager, we've got a new coach, you need time to bed in. It's rubbish. So, you know, players always look for an excuse and it's always, well, we need time to work. You don't hear players at the top club saying that. The best players, they just get on with it.
And I don't know. I think this is another transition.
Tottenham need a leader, a proper manager, a proper coach who will bring those. You know, got to get Kane on side. Got to get Kane happy. And I really don't think that Harry Kane went back to Tottenham. There's some thinking, great, I'm working with Nuno,
having wanted to go,
Guardiola. It's not if. If you're Harry Kane, you want to be working with a coach that's going to make you better, make your team better.
But I don't agree with you, Augie, is that everybody who was part of the decision of appointing Nuno knew this anyway.
Of course.
So
and they went for 10 other guys and for one reason or another they didn't get them and they ended up with Nuno.
Yeah, so you get Nuno and you know that it's not going to be fantastic football. But you just stick with him and just have faith in what he's trying to do.
But the thing is, Jules, and you know what Tottenham's like? Tottenham is a club where, and people will laugh at this, it's a bit like the West Ham way of playing. Tottenham fans like to play a certain way. Exciting football. If they're not
but
winning...
When did they play that?
Under Harry Redknapp, under Pochettino, football that got the fans excited. Now, if they don't win something, at least they're being entertained. Nuno and under Mourinho, they're not being entertained and they're not going to win anything.
Can I point out
the point of Nuno? It's more like no than Nuno, because what is he going to bring?
oh,
Hey, to be fair to Tottenham, they also they've had managers like George Graham as well. So this whole like the Tottenham
and they hated him. They didn't like him.
But that's fine. His name. I think Daniel Levy, if there's one thing he knows, it's Tottenham. So evidently, he doesn't necessarily. He thinks that if they start winning, they're fine, and people will embrace that. I also think, as far as Nuno's concerned, much as I said, I don't like him, and I don't like Wolves, the Wolves ownership, and what's been allowed to go on there. He got Wolves fans excited in his first two seasons. You know, they were Wolves. Playing.
They were a very good counter-attacking team, but that's it.
No, that's fine. I'm not saying it's a second coming. So, but I'm not saying Nuno can't do that. And I also feel a little bit, what you said before about elite players need elite coaches. Well, first of all, I'll refer you to one of the three teams that's top of the table right now and that plays in red and that isn't Liverpool. And that there's an endless debate about whether that's an elite coach. But all these elite players... Spurs, I'm kind of wondering, who are you talking about? Like, what elite coaches has Sergio Reguilón had? What elite coaches has Romero had, right? Did very well at Atalanta with Gasperini. Right? He's now an elite coach. Yeah, but that's fine. But he wasn't an elite coach when he walked through the door.
No.
Right? Yeah. Who has Ndombele worked with, right? Højbjerg, maybe when he was a Bayern as a kid. Other than that, I love Hasenhüttl. I think Hasenhüttl deserves a better job. But, you know, until these guys get there, nobody's an elite coach, right? And these elite players, who are they? Who? Son and Kane, right? Son, who are these other elite players that are... I mean, Hugo Lloris, you could say, won a World Cup. Yeah. Oh, who's his coach?
He's an elite player. Don't get me started. Okay. He's an elite player.
Yeah, but guys...
With Didier Deschamps, right? Speaking of elite coaches. Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
If Dele Alli was working for Jurgen Klopp or Pep Guardiola, I reckon he would be a player that was realizing his potential because he was working with an elite coach who would get the best out of him. I think you certain players...
If I had a helicopter, I'd get home quicker.
Yeah.
He's not working with them. I mean, you can't just say elite coach or it's got to be Pep or Klopp.
Either. There's some elite players who played with those coaches who didn't actually fulfill their potential either. It's just...
Absolutely.
I think this is transition for Nuno and for Spurs. It might not be the right guy and he might be gone in January or even before that. It might stick and something can come good out of it. I don't know. Dele Alli said yesterday they were positives about the performance against Chelsea. I was like, all right.
45 minutes, they worked hard. You don't go out and play like this. No, but I'm saying is you don't do that for a manager you don't like or don't respect. Or it's harder. You often don't do that.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
That shows that they bought into the thing. They understood the situation.
I just don't know how long that can last.
I want to circle back to the European champions, Chelsea.
Yeah.
This is what struck me. I don't want to harp on about their poor performances before this, because again, they won, they didn't concede, fine. But I was struck by the fact that going into this game, he switched it up. He played Azpilicueta. He moved Azpilicueta out of the back three, which instantly makes things more defensive. The change that he made at halftime, obviously, ended up scoring. But he took off Mount for Conte, which again is very much
a defensive move.
What's going through Tuchel's mind? Do you think he looks at this and he says, you know, we need to stiffen up for certain games. We're not necessarily where I would like us to be right now. And maybe, just maybe, I'm not 100% sold on who the two guys behind Lukaku are.
I'm not sure. I think he expected Spurs to play more instead of playing long. And I think Conte coming on in the second half is to win second balls. And the fact that they scored...
Right about the fact that Azpilicueta starts in place of Reece James, who, coincidentally, you were having a kick about with.
Yeah, right? My friend Reece, who had a tough week, to be fair. We know what happened in his private life and his heart being burglared and all of that. So maybe that was part of the reason. Maybe also I think that Tuchel thought Son would play on the left-hand side as a left winger, which we all expected that with Kane central and not the other around. And maybe you put Azpilicueta then to defend on Son with Christensen and having someone more defensive than Reece James,
that
for
would
example,
make sense, yeah.
In a way. So, and then the fact that Son actually played central and Kane on the left, maybe that's why that's something that Tuchel didn't expect. I just think Kante helped you to win those second balls in midfield to get the game under a bit more control. And for that, you have to sacrifice either Mount or Havertz. I still think that he's happy with Havertz and Mount behind Lukaku, and I think both of them could have scored in the first half if their finish had been a bit better.
Augie, what's your take on on Mount? Because there's a school of thought that says that he just played way too many games last season, and that this season they're gonna have to pace him a little bit more.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if he's played too many games. I just think with Tuchel, I think he's one of these coaches that identifies something during the game and will change it to suit, no matter who the victim on the pitch is. Mount will play as many games as virtually every Chelsea player this year because he's so, I think, durable is the word, isn't it? I don't think Mount needs to be, rested up. I think he's one of those players that can play a lot. There might become a time when you have to take him out of the firing a little bit, but I don't think he's one of these players that is one of those fragile players like that.
Are you more worried, not so much about his fitness and if he plays too much, by the end product? Because there's a lot of things he does so well. But then I look at him yesterday again, the first half. He should have scored, maybe assisted again. And in the end, there's none of that. What? And do you think that there's a point where, even for him to go to the next level, he will have to be a bit more clinical in what he does in the box or in the last third of the pitch? Or are you happy to start him even if there's no those goals and assists?
Like, I think this is one of the situations where you have to know the player and work with him intimately daily to know what he responds best to. I do think there is a legitimate risk of burnout, whether physical or mental. And you want to, you want to protect your player before he gets into that red zone where it can happen. I think Mount has so much energy, gives you so much, has a ton of quality. I think he's played a tremendous number of games with England, with Chelsea last season. And I don't see anything wrong with easing him in to it more and more. You say it very clearly. There's a hierarchy here. You are a starter.
He's a starter, for sure.
Of course.
He's a starter.
But you don't play every game because we don't need you in every game because we have a ton of other people in these situations and we want you to be at your best in the second half of the season. We're going to get onto this later, but if Klopp can rest Virgil van Dijk for the Champions League opener, I don't think that, by the way, this isn't, Mount's missed games already this season. I wonder if this is something that they're doing, exercising some kind of load management, because there is a lot of mental pressure that these players come under. And it's not just the physical side of things. And maybe Mount feels that. Or maybe not. Maybe he's a machine and can play every minute this season and be great. I genuinely don't know. But I do want to go back to one other thing, that so far Lukaku's played. He's been durable. There's been no real issue here. But I still don't feel that Chelsea going forward dominate the opposition the way at some point I expect a Tuchel team to do. Because this is, my Tuchel reference point is always Mainz and early on at Dortmund. We haven't seen that. More broadly, we've seen tremendous defending, good man management from Thomas Tuchel. But I feel like it's been more like it was at Paris Saint-Germain, where he sorted out the defense and he waited for the talented guys up front to do something. Maybe it's a bit harsh.
You're a bit harsh, because yesterday I thought, so especially again in the second half, but it's easier when you play against a team that has to come out a bit. Yeah, no, but because the way they use Lukaku, for example, is already much better than I thought in the first few games of the season, where whether it's back to goal and we saw the 1-2 with Kovacic, we saw the ball then in.
Lukaku is a passer.
Yeah,
so that gives you that
ball
extra
to
dimension.
Werner.
Yeah.
I mean, the one before he misses the chance, the one before that, where I think Lukaku could have taken a shot himself, driving the ball forward. I think they're improving going forward. Well, it can always be better, but I still think that they will always create chances. They will always find. I don't know how Lukaku didn't get a goal and an assist yesterday. He certainly deserves it for the kind of performance that he had. I think they were very unlucky that he didn't score more and that he didn't score more either. And they were quite wasteful in front of goals. But I can see some improvement. And I guess the game against City on Saturday at Stamford Bridge will maybe be a bit more of a test. Instead of, okay, what can you do with the ball now? Show us, because you'll be home and against arguably the best team in the country.
Although, again, a team that also can keep the ball for long stretches. So
yeah, but
that might actually be a game where maybe you choose to be a little more defensive, and I would accept that. Augie, do you see Tuchel adding this other dimension where they can go out and just dominate opponents with the ball that we don't see all the time from Chelsea, or am I nitpicking, or is Tuchel at a ceiling?
I think you're right. I think that's the way Chelsea play under Tuchel. I think they are very mechanical in that sense. They're not a team that will pass like City. But you know, Lukaku is a big part of that, and I'm still not sure about Lukaku in terms of against the very best opposition. You know, he will score lots of goals against teams outside the top six, but this title race could be decided by what happens in the games between the top four. And I saw him at Anfield and I thought it was poor on that day at Anfield. He didn't offer Chelsea a lot. Yesterday, you know, that chance in the first half where he could have taken his right foot and decided to pass instead. That I don't know, there's something about Lukaku that doesn't quite excite me against the top teams. Ronaldo, Salah, these players, you know they're going to score in the big games. I'm just not sure about Lukaku. And that could be Chelsea's undoing at the end of the day. And also, listen, let's be honest, he has made them better with his presence up front, and he does occupy defenders. So he has certainly made them better, but has he made them better to the point where they will win the league? I'm not too sure. I still wait and see on that one.
All right, I'm going to zip my lips because I wasn't expecting a still not sure about Lukaku argument at this stage. So I'll let you handle this, Jules.
Same with me. But can I say something about Thiago Silva?
Of course we do. We need to celebrate him even more.
Ah, come on. At his age as well, and with his hair color, because I think that's very important. And you know he's my guy.
I think helps, though, because it helps certainly on headers. The ball is naturally attracted to lighter colours.
Yes. Maybe you're right. I just thought yesterday, and I know it was a Spurs team that didn't do much going forward, let's put it that way. But his reading of the game was incredible. The timing of everything, because he's not the quickest, has never been, and even less, I guess, now with age.
I would say he's never been, believe me.
No, but
I've
come on.
Seen a lot of, yeah, he's not Marquinhos, he gets around.
Yeah, but at his age now, at 37,
now, yeah,
it's all about timing, you know, when to step up and when to drop and all of that. And I just thought yesterday, it was just crazy. And even I saw him after the game and I said, is that your best? Be honest. Is that your best game? And he said, I think in terms of defensive performance and adding a goal to it, he said, yeah, I think this is maybe one of the best one at Chelsea, because there's just nothing. He could even have scored the second one, but there's nothing that he did wrong, I think, in the whole game. And he was so calm and so composed when he got the ball, even under pressure. I just thought, like, wow. And he's not going to play every game, but he can't at his age. So I don't know what happens, for example, after the City game and then the Juventus game coming 3 days later. I don't know if he can play both or not, but I just think he's been amazing in that game for them. Incredible.
All right, final question for me, just on what I think is a bit of an underreported story. We've talked about Chelsea's defense and how obviously Thiago Silva is older, Spiliqueta is older. Rudiger, still not signed a new contract. Mm. If I'm Rudiger, I mean, it's a bit like Tielemans at Leicester. Like, I just sit and wait and see what comes in.
Yeah, but why would you want to come in?
What?
That's the only thing I don't get is he's got an offer. I'm told a very good offer. He works with Tuchel, who is like a father figure to him, kind of thing. He's in the best team in Europe, one of the best in the Premier League, maybe even the team that's going to win the Premier League title. So what? He wants to go back to Germany. He wants Bayern Munich. He wants to go to Real Madrid with Alaba and with a huge contract as a free agent. What's the idea, do you think?
That's my question. That's what I don't know about. Because, you know, realistically,
so what would you want to move from this club? I mean,
it's, I don't know. That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Real Madrid is Real Madrid. Maybe he wants a different experience.
Yeah.
He's won everything there is to win at Chelsea. I could understand that. I can respect that. But I do wonder from Chelsea's perspective, obviously, I presume they'll go back in for Jules Koundé, but
yeah, I think so.
They're going to need somebody else as well if Rudiger leaves. It's not just going to be, let's just drop Jules Koundé in here, right?
Chalobah? But then you might, no?
You want to go into next season with a Chalaba, Christensen, Koundé backline?
No, but
that,
Thiago,
that excites you?
Thiago will stay next season, won't he?
Okay, yeah, plus 38-year-old Thiago Silva.
No, but
next
I
season,
mean,
34-year-old.
Play.
Good.
No, maybe you're right.
All right, Mark, give me
right.
percentage chance that Rudiger's a Chelsea player next season.
Well, if I was Rudiger, I'd want to stay. So I'd say 70%, but you know, like you said, there could be opportunities elsewhere that he wants to take. But it is a strange one. I think he's got everything he needs at Chelsea, so, you know, just Real Madrid and be part of a transition and maybe not win something. So, yeah, I'd stay at Chelsea.
Go to Real Madrid and play with Kylian Mbappe. There you go.
Hey.
Thanks, Augie. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Chelsea, enough Spurs. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Mauricio Icardi scores a buzzer-beating winner for Paris Saint-Germain against Lyon. But Jules, this wasn't great.
Oh, behave.
Messi
behave.
Substituted. Behave. Neymar buying
what?
A penalty and being charitable. Is this thing actually working?
It's early. It's early to work anyway. You would be more surprised if everything was amazing already after just two games, no?
Doesn't need to be amazing. Just needs to be something.
I thought there were good things in the first half. They could easily have been 2 or 3 nil up or 3-1 up maybe, let's say, at the break.
I thought they didn't concede in the first half.
Yeah. So yeah. Lyon should have scored in the first half. I think PSG should have scored too. Messi has hit the bar, has that big chance on the back heel from Neymar. I thought even in the counter-pressing, the way they recovered the ball, I thought there was some better things than against Bruges where they could chase the ball and never got it back. But you're right, there's still a lot of work to do. Yeah, Messi was really good, I thought, in the first half. Then faded away. He had a little niggle in his thigh. He wanted to keep playing.
Poch, is that a thing, the substitution? Is it a thing is it just...
So I'm being told that Poch didn't want to take any risk because they play again in the league, not a cup game in midweek. Didn't want to take any risk. Messi wanted to keep playing. And I think when Messi comes off and doesn't really, you know, high-five him and that kind of stuff, I think Poch says, no risk here. And Messi's like, I can tell you if it's risky or not.
I know my body. Okay, yeah. It's not a big deal. Nobody's happy when there's
but something. Neymar bought a pen. Yeah, I'm not sure it's really a pen. And then Mauricio Icardi, who just
Let's go back to Neymar for a second. That was...
I think you can give a foul from Neymar on young Malogusto.
Absolutely.
Before, and if Malogusto is maybe a bit more experienced, he plays a bit better and there's no pen. But
that reminded me of the Bill Lane beer rocking the old school NBA true. Knowledge there.
Yeah,
and Icardi, he looks so happy and this is what he's here for.
Yeah, and I think he will be a super sub like coming on, and don't expect him. He was slagged off after the Bruges game for coming on and hardly not doing anything. But all he does is it's scoring chances. Yeah, don't expect more from him. And sticking with Messi, Gab, L'Equipe revealed, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, what they saw as the leaked salary for Lionel Messi, earning 110 million after tax over 3 years. That's in euros, if he stays for the duration of that contract. That's more than 80 million dollars, if you want in dollars. What do you make of this? It's £1 million a week, basically, if you like.
It's a little bit more than £1 million a week.
You were saying to me, but that's what we all knew already, so what's the fuss about? Is that right?
I don't pretend to understand the French media and how you people work. But like, I'm serious. You say, ooh, we have the leaked details, and they're exactly what everybody's been reporting all along. This would be news if it was a lot more or a lot less.
I see.
This is point. What everybody said, and then for Paris Saint-Germain said, no, it's not, it's less than that. You know what? There's a great solution to all this. Make everything public and transparent.
Yeah.
And the reason clubs don't do this, they cite competitive advantage, they cite privacy, whatever. No, the reason is that you don't want to look stupid, because when people find out that your star player, you're paying him an enormous amount of money and he sucks, I'm not talking about Messi necessarily.
No.
Then you look stupid. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Manchester City are held to a 0-0 draw at home by Southampton, and it could have been worse if referee Jonathan Moss had not overturned his own decision to award a penalty and red card for Kyle Walker's tackle on Adam Armstrong. Jules, to me, it looked like Moss was correct this first time. And I like Jonathan Moss. I feel a little sorry for him because he seems like a nice person. But, dude, you made a decision on the pitch. VAR asked you to take another look. It doesn't mean you have to change your decision.
But if he looks at it, I thought it was not a pen.
How? How is it not a penalty?
I didn't think it was a pen at all.
Since when are you allowed to do that?
I don't see much contact in the incident. I promise you, I don't see.
I don't think he touches him much,
and then Armstrong plays for it. So I was not sure. I can see him giving. I saw him giving somebody much
and making him fall over.
But you can earn a pen like we talked with Neymar.
I don't think it was a red card, and I'm going to give them benefit. Hopefully they'll tell us, but I would hope that the VAR spoke to him and said, "Look, you know, you came out." And take a look at the. It shouldn't be a red card because it's an honest attempt to play the ball.
But do you think that's why they call him?
That's the only reason I can think of because to me, it's certainly not a clear and obvious mistake. Maybe a clear and obvious mistake is the red card, but it's certainly not the foul. Anyway.
Yeah. Sticking with City, Guardiola has been in a weird back and forth of argument with his own fans, urging them to fill the Etihad after the Champions League game against Leipzig, where it was far from full, for this game on Saturday against Southampton, saying, we need you here. And then it turned out that they don't come. And then the fans have a go back at Pep. I mean, how weird is this?
This is weird. Sometimes I really don't understand Pep. This is not...
But even the fans, why would you have a go at him back?
Because, listen... Look, there's the long history of City fans not necessarily getting excited for the Champions League because of the way they view UEFA and whatever else. Some City fans, right? Pep doesn't seem to understand or appreciate this. Going out and calling out the fans like this and then coming out with this, like, when the guy from the City supporters group says, you know, comes back at him and says, like, I will not apologize, but blah, blah, blah. You get this long, convoluted thing. Just... be quiet. You're making the situation worse. You said it. Whatever. They'll come. I think, you know, with City fans, people make a joke. There are a lot of City fans who are bandwagon jumpers, but there is a legitimate hardcore of City fans who've been there all along.
Yeah.
They were selling out that stadium, or not that stadium, but Main Road, before all the money rolled into town.
Exactly.
So I think just respect them. It's never a good thing. If anything you
but
say
you
as
can't
a manager.
Criticize Pep for saying it's when Klopp arrived and said, why are the fans leaving before the end? I don't like it. You know, Klopp said the same. He said, why are you leaving before
There's
the end?
There's a difference between saying, why are you leaving before the end and why are you not showing up?
I mean, I think. But in a way, it's quite the idea is similar.
I think the fact that the response was the one that it was suggests that Pep is better off just leaving it and remembering that fans always come
first. It's not
first.
A good look for your club, though.
Cristiano Ronaldo scores again as Manchester United beat West Ham 2-1.
But Jules,
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer felt he was denied a couple of penalties.
I thought the one on Soufal was deadpan. I don't understand why they don't even say to him, come and look at the screen. I mean, Soufal, you know, there's the little trick and Soufal put his leg. And even if he tries to move his leg back in, it still makes contact.
One of those 100%.
I don't understand.
The other one, I can only assume that the ref... More likely, I think the referee just got it wrong because he's not a very good referee.
Yeah.
More likely, he thought maybe Cristiano played for the contact, whatever. I think the other one was...
The other one you could see it not given. But the first, the Soufal one...
By the way, props to United. I thought this was not an easy game for them coming on the back of the thing. And I thought they actually played... reasonably well.
I should be more comfortable against a decent,
very defensive West Ham.
Yeah, they were. And then the other big call in that game is West Ham boss David Moyes sent on Mark Noble right at the end in the final seconds of injury time to take the penalty that West Ham just got to draw the game 2-2. And guess what? Noble misses the penalty. Well, it's a bit like Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, Euros, all over. Is that fair that Moyes gets criticised?
You know, this is the typical thing where if it does it and it works, you're a genius. If you get it wrong...
Why'd you do it?
Well, if you get it wrong, oh, he's not warmed up enough. Listen, they had... somebody pointed out to me in the Europa League final, right? Three penalty takers came on right before the penalty kicks and they all converted them. I trust David Moyes enough and I trust Mark Noble enough to know that if he feels ready, he feels ready. It's a spot kick against a goalkeeper who's got a horrendous penalty saving record.
41 pens in a row or something,
right?
Before he made that
save. So, you know what? You play the percentages, sometimes it doesn't work. Let's leave Moisey alone on this one.
Okay.
More last-ditch heroics for the Karim Benzema-Vinicius partnership as Real Madrid come from behind to beat Valencia 2-1. Are you impressed?
I'm impressed by the partnership, not so much by, especially the first half of Real Madrid. I thought it was a very intense game against Valencia.
Yeah, Bordalas, come on.
You have to work hard to go and win that game. And I thought for a long time they would not win it after Hugo Duro scored the goal for Valencia. But credit to Karim for creating the chance for Vinicius, who took it well. And then the Vinicius cross for Benzema, who misses it with the head but scored with his shoulder to make it 2-1. That partnership is good. There's other things to fix and sort out. I still think they conceded two big chances in the first half and Courtois had to make two good saves. But this is a win. You're top of the table. You're unbeaten. You take it and you move on.
A la Madrid.
If you believe that just a year ago, Karim Benzema was saying, don't pass the ball to Vinicius.
I know. What a story that is.
It's now four games without a victory in Serie A for Max Allegri after the held by Milan 1-1 at home. Gab, what's the excuse this time?
So they actually played really, really well in the first half. They took the lead through Morata. It was a goal that reminded me of the goal that he scored against Bayern when Pep was there. But then Milan came out in the second half and I think created a lot of problems. Milan could have won this game.
Yeah.
Max Allegri says that the ball is heavy when you're wearing a Juve shirt. And I'm thinking, Max, please, less metaphors. Just get to work. Yeah. Just fix the midfield with what you have. They're not there yet. Although, again, small signs of improvement. Get Chiesa involved and Kulusevski involved and do your thing. Because right now, it's not good enough. You deserve time. Give you time.
Yeah.
But also, why can't De Ligt get more of a game? I don't get that.
I don't understand.
Arsenal had nul point and no goals after the first three games. And we all said how important the matches against Norwich and Burnley were going to be. Well, they got 2-1-0 wins. Are you convinced at this stage, Jules? And can it all be undone if they screw up the derby against Spurs next weekend?
Yeah, of course. It's still quite fragile. It's still... You know, it's not completely convincing, but I liked what I saw from Aaron Ramsdale and that kind of leadership that he brings, that defense, even if it was not always perfect. But I think they're getting there. I know you're shaking your head.
You're saying Ramsdale, Leno was not really the biggest part of the problem. I think it's just getting the better defenders.
But you also needed leadership that Leno didn't bring to you.
Well, Thomas Partey's back. That helps.
Yeah, I think that helps a lot too. And I expect them to get better with the ball. You know, I think Saka is still far from what he can bring at his best to this team, and that will come. But I liked what I saw.
I want to see him have the setup that allows you to play Odegaard and Smith Rowe together, like we saw. I want to see that against bigger opponents. Smith Rowe could have scored.
I thought there were some promising things, let's put it that way. But big game on Sunday. Liverpool changed their entire back four and beat Crystal Palace and my boy Patrick Vieira 3-0. Gab, Jurgen Klopp rotated heavily already in the Champions League against Milan. We saw that. And now in this game, what do you make of this? And is this the way of keeping the players fresh for the League Cup this week, for example?
No, it's obviously not about the League Cup. I don't know. I'd love to know. I would really love to know, because people talk about management, about chemistry all the time. You change your entire back four. That's odd. That sets you up. If it doesn't work out, that sets you up for criticism. I wonder if they're taking a different approach towards load management, saying we're just going to rotate players now and then they'll all be fresh come March when it really matters.
Or you avoid injuries that way too.
It's an interesting approach. Bayern destroyed Bochum 7-0, and even your boy Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting scores. Jules, did you learn anything other than the fact that Bochum are terrible?
They are terrible. I think it's their worst defeat ever in the Bundesliga or something like that. It could have been even more than 7. It could have been more. I'm more surprised that Lewandowski only scored one, and Kimmich too. It's not many games where Kimmich will score more than Lewandowski. But I think if you're Nagelsmann, you take it.
You can only do what's in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't take much out of that game as well.
Between this and the Barcelona game, there's two games in a row where Bayern were just like, we're not really tested here.
Where is the opposition? Bring some opposition. Inter beat Bologna 6-1 to stay on top of the Serie A table alongside Milan. Gab, they're certainly scoring more goals than under Antonio Conte.
They certainly are. They change things around. They attack with more men. What I love on the counter is they bring so many people into the box. Yeah. This game could have gone. It's one of those games where Inter did well at the beginning. Then Bologna came close to, I think, turning the game around. Mm. And then obviously they exploded in the second half. I think what's encouraging, though, is we saw some new faces. We saw Denzel Dumfries get his first start.
Well, yeah.
Fede Di Marco down the left is tremendous. Again, with hindsight, maybe you could have kept Di Marco there last season rather than loaning him out. But it was Matias Vecino. I mean, I'd forgotten about him completely.
Completely.
Goes out, does a job for you. I think it's really important.
when Lautaro scores, which he couldn't do against Real.
Checo getting the business done. Only downside is Correa's injury. He started, came off after, I think, right around about a half an hour. But no, they're in good shape, and they didn't let the disappointment of that Real Madrid defeat get to them. And I think that's really important for the growth of this team psychologically.
Yeah.
Erling Haaland scores twice as Borussia Dortmund beat Union Berlin 4-2. His average is back up to more than a goal a game since arriving, which is pretty much unreal. We can celebrate him, but with the usual defensive issues at the back.
But at least you know that's coming. You know every game that's coming. That Diamond will left them exposed. They conceded two goals and Union came back to 3-2. They're fun to watch. Okay. Not for you as an Italian, but...
You know, it's not fun for anybody because you know what?
It is fun.
It's not. Listen, at 3-2, they're under pressure. They get the breakaway. He scores that absurd goal where, look, I want to believe it was all intentional because it's Erling Haaland.
Yeah, of course it was.
But his whole body... And look, you give him credit for the pace and the awareness and the yoga flexibility to stick his long boot out and direct the ball.
Ibra-esque.
Oh, well, that's setting the bar pretty high.
Ibra-esque.
I might have to tell Zlatan that you said that. But, goodness me, you can't tell me it's part of your game plan to count on that.
It's not part of
your
game plan.
You're 3-2, you're getting hammered, you're conceding shots left, right, and center.
No, I know you are. I know you are. I was only saying this is fun to watch if you're neutral. Not if you're Bayern, not if you're a Borussia Dortmund fan, but if you're neutral. It's fun every time you sit down in front of them, the TV watching them, you know you're in for a good time, right? It's true.
Yeah, but you know what annoys me is that Marco Rose's, well, I saw him work at Gladbach 2 years ago. He didn't defend like this.
They were not great defensively either.
But at least there was some semblance to it.
Yeah, no, I know. But maybe that will come. Maybe, you know, the Hummels, Akanji, and then you move Witzel back into... maybe something will come
out. I don't think
Hummels
is ever going to play again, to be honest.
No, I know.
The way he's going.
I know, but I, you know what? I like watching them. Erling is amazing, of course, as we know. And defensively, they will concede goals.
Even Thomas Meunier put in some good crosses.
Yeah, and Guerrero scoring again. So, you know, there was a lot of positives. But yeah, you always see half empty because of your defensive mindset.
No, it's not that. I just want people to do things well.
Well, talking about defensive mindset and, and you know, being all over the place. Atletico Madrid are held nil-nil by Athletic Bilbao and they're furious with the referee for the red card for Joao Felix. But let's start with the performance because that was... poor again.
It was a poor performance. There was no Koke, and I think
Suarez on the bench.
Suarez has got to get used to it. He's not going to be playing every game, right? Rodrigo de Paul is fantastic, but he's not at this stage of his career. He's not going to run the team the way Koke does. No. And I think you have to accept that. They fluffed a big chance with Llorente, I thought. But then they gave up two enormous chances as well. Iñaki Williams
should have
can
scored.
Do everything but finish.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
If
he could finish,
crazy.
He'd be one of the best players in Spain. Villalibre as well, missing a big chance.
Yeah.
So you can't just turn it on the referee for two big incidents. Now, the two big incidents that really annoyed them is, I'll take the second one first, was 6 minutes of injury time. The referee blows right when the 6 minutes end, even though they had a counterattack, right?
I mean, that's bad.
This is
that
bad referee.
It's through on goal. Carrasco is through on goal.
Yeah, so that's one thing that annoyed him, and I have some sympathy there. The other one, Joao Felix, I have zero sympathy.
But they can't moan about that one.
But they can.
He elbows him.
And they did, right? So you get a dubious yellow card, right? And then your reaction is to go and do this.
You're local, you can read on his lips even.
Yeah, you can say like, oh, you're crazy, right? You don't do that in front of the referee, especially if you know the referee is Gil Manzano, who, let's face it, is a little bit of a diva. Part of your job as a professional footballer, João Félix, especially one who cost 120 million euros and who's now been at the club. This is his third year at the club.
Yeah.
Start behaving like a professional. Prepare for your opponents. Prepare for the referee. Don't put your team in these difficult positions. Because this could go down as one of the worst signings of all time in the direction that he's heading right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't see him getting back into the team on a regular basis easily, especially now with Griezmann there. Right? Griezmann, Correa, Mateus Cunha, and Suarez. Where's this dude going to play? How's he going to get regular playing time?
I know.
So you need to take what you can give. And that would be my concern with João Félix. We were talking about him in like the second Cristiano not that long ago.
Yeah, that season at Benfica was incredible. But
Leipzig are held by Cologne 1-1. It's now four games without a game for Jesse Marsch in all competitions. Jules, are the Scurs starting to turn?
A little bit, I think, Gab, but he still says, you know, there's positive, the team is, everything is okay, the team is working well, it's training well. Okay, I get that, Jesse. At some point, this is a result business and you have to show more. Even if you had chances and you could have won that game against Cologne and Anthony Modeste, of all people, like 45 years old or something, he scores. This is just not good enough. You know, it's just not good enough. And I think he would have to change something, whether in his way of managing that team, in the players that start, in the formation, I don't know, anything he wants. But
I wanted to give the midweek game against City as a bit of an alibi because
they
did work really hard.
They did.
But then again, you also have an enormous squad and you keep changing players as well. So. Yeah. Yeah, you got to step it up several notches.
After five consecutive wins in all competitions, Jose Mourinho's Roma gave up a lead and are beaten 3-2 away at Verona. Gab, I'm going to bet he was grumpy after the game.
Yeah, I think especially the part about giving away the lead.
Yeah.
And by the way, tremendous goal from Pellegrini. I know you
fantastic.
Love your Keckers.
Oh my
that was
God.
Unreal. You know, I know it's a cliche, but we say, oh, well, if Messi or Cristiano did that, it would be running on an endless loop.
And under the rain as well, crazy rain.
It should be, yes.
Wow.
But look, they got outplayed in the second half. And Mourinho's solution at the end, which we've seen before, is to just send in all the strikers one after the other and just kind of try to punch the ball into the net. That wasn't going to work. Look, they had a good start. They're enthusiastic. He took it on the chin afterwards and moved on. Let's see how, you know, we've praised him.
Yeah.
And in the past, we've seen wheels come off when he's had too many games like this one. Let's move on. Let's reserve judgment until then.
And a little word for Igor Tudor, whose first game in charge and changed Verona the way he did. I was like, wow, okay. They played
absolutely
so well.
Igor Tudor, who was a punchline until recently, comes in, gets it done. Lens win their big derby against Lille in a game marred by crowd trouble. Jules, would you rather celebrate Lens' great start, lament the defending champion's bad start, or talk about the crowd trouble? Or maybe all three.
All of this. Yeah, all of this. Let's start with the crowd trouble because it's a shame. It's a shame. Not long after the Nice-Marseille incidents, we've got more incidents at halftime. But before the game, if you haven't seen it, the Lens fans, and this is, you know, a lot of hatred.
It's a lot of rivalry. These two teams, they're almost Belgian, right?
Yeah, they're very French, but they're very close to each other as well. And they're so different in every sense of the word.
When you say different, is it fair to say Lens are kind of like the more working class
exactly,
blah, blah, blah,
and
Lille are like... But this is just because Lille got the Eurostar station in Lens.
No. If it was just that, it would be easier. But and the Lens fans welcomed their counterpart with a big banner saying Lille Merda, as you can just, I don't need to translate it for you. And then at halftime, there were issues apparently starting with the away fans. It's kind of throwing seats that they broke into their stands towards the Lens fans next to them. So then the Lens ultras thought we're going to go and defend the other Lens fans next to the Lille fans, who are the family enclosure. So they tried to cross over from their ultra stands to the Lille, to confront the Lille fans. So it looked also messy because there was the cops and the steward and the Lens ultras, and then the Lille fans were trying to get also onto the pitch to have a fight with them. It all went away before the second half. But again, it's not the right image that you want to show. The game in itself, I thought, was good because Lens are really fun team to watch. They play with wing bags. They have got a lot of energy. Frank Hayes, their manager, is a really, really, really promising young coach. And Lille is just so disappointing. They put a good shift against Wolfsburg in the Champions League, and now they go back to what they used to do earlier in the season, which not much with the ball, not having the solidity that they used to have last season, when it's pretty much, apart from the goalkeeper and Soumaré, I guess, but it's the same team. It's strange. It's really strange, but I think Lille had been in trouble.
Different manager, right?
And different manager, of course. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's where the big difference is. Derby County have entered administration and could now be facing a point penalty of 12 or even 21 points in the championship. Gab, this is a really sad situation.
Yeah, it's a sad situation. This goes back to what I keep going on about forever, which is if we had more transparency in football and you wouldn't even need regulation because you would have local fans, and I know they exist at Derby, they exist everywhere, especially in England. you would have people who look through the club accounts and they look at the numbers and they say, well, hang on a minute. How can we afford this? Yeah, what are you doing to our club? You're taking
viable.
Risks with our clubs.
Yeah.
It's sad. There were reports that, you know, Wayne Rooney, who of course is the manager there, he's deferred his wages for a long, long time. He's even some reports, I don't know if it's true, that he's been paying for some of the travel when they go on the road. Now, obviously, you can say, oh, well, Wayne Rooney is a rich man. He can, I know, but it's not Wayne Rooney's club.
Exactly.
This is an unacceptable situation. I would point fingers at the EFL because you need more openness and more transparency and more vigilance. You've shown that you cannot police this. They're not the only club. There's a whole bunch of clubs.
Of course.
We saw it before with Barry, with Bolton. You cannot police this. Make it public. Put all the numbers out there so that people can police it locally because you are incapable of doing so. Mm. And it's sad, and the fans deserve better. And by the way, somebody asked me on Twitter, like, well, why is it fair that, you know, they're going to get administration, they get this big points, sorry, they're in administration, they get this big points penalty, and they're going to be relegated, whereas the six Super League clubs, you know, they only got, I think, was it a $3 million fine each. And the reason that administration, for those who don't know, it's an English term, it means that essentially it's like going into to Chapter 11 bankruptcy in the U.S., where essentially somebody takes over the club and you negotiate down the debts that you have. The reason administration's so bad is your debts are often to other clubs. And it can, if you default on your debts and you pay less, it can create a chain effect.
Yeah.
So that's the reason it's so bad. They also don't want owners coming in saying, oh, I'll put them in the Chapter 11, restructure, write off the debt, and then we'll buy the team cheaper. They also want to disincentivize that. Whereas with the Super League teams, ultimately, they came back. It's sad.
It's crazy, though.
Derby deserved much better.
Yeah.
Real Sociedad stay third in La Liga after their 0-0 draw with Sevilla. Jules, they could have been second if Mikel Oyarzabal had converted the penalty.
They could. I thought they played well, and I was a bit disappointed by Sevilla in the performance that they had in this game. What I want to say is that Mikel Oyarzabal is not Superman or Batman or Spider-Man or any superhero there. He played the whole of last season, including the Europa League. He played the Euros. He went to the Olympics. There's a point where, and I'm not finding excuses for him to missing a penalty. He could still have scored the penalty. But there's a point where, and it's the same for Pedri and plenty of others, where you can't push and keep pushing with those players. Regardless as young as they are or as talented as they are or as intelligent as they are, like he is, there's a point where he can't do too much more. And I just think that people have to be very careful of not of just overplaying. And we talked about burnout before earlier in the show. About Mason Mount. This is very similar. And again, this is not why he missed the penalty.
Yeah.
But there's a point where the poor kid, he needs a break. Do you know what I mean?
No. And he's been asked to carry this team. I think
he's
by
the
far
captain,
the best
he's
player
his club.
That they have.
You know, it's a lot.
But he's still very young as well.
Yeah, he is. Paulinho, he's a free agent again. Remember him, Paulinho? Gab, his contract has been cancelled twice now in the space of 3 months. What's going on?
So the answer is I don't quite know. I just like the story because I liked Paulinho when he was good. I know like he became a punchline.
Yeah, it was a bit of a joke.
It was a bit harsh.
It was a bit
on
mean.
Him.
Yeah.
Then they did manage to sell him well. Went to Barcelona, bounced around. But you know, we're talking about a guy who was a legit Brazilian international for a long time.
He was.
So he went to China. He went to Guangzhou Evergrande. Did the whole thing. Big contract. Did really well. Then they ended up canceling his contract, or his contract wasn't renewed because obviously of the cash crunch that hit Chinese football. They just stopped playing during the pandemic. So he signs for Al Ahly in Saudi Arabia, scores, I think it was 2 goals in 4 games. Everything's going well. And then they just put out the statement announcing that, his contract's been canceled due to exceptional circumstances. I don't know what those exceptional circumstances are.
So
I would like to make an appeal to my many friends in Saudi Arabia, maybe even those at Al Ahly, please tell us the story. Hit us up on Twitter, at Marcotti, at Lawrence Julian. Please, I would genuinely like to find out what happened. In fact, Paulinho, I know you're a regular
listener
as well. You watch the show. You get in touch. You've got time on your hands now.
Obrigado.
I don't know if we can let you into the UK because of the weird quarantine rules that this government has, but we will happily host you on Zoom. And we wish you all the best. We'll even help you find another team. He's 33. He can still play.
He can still do
a
job.
Help somebody.
Definitely.
He can definitely
He's going to go back to Brazil, like, you know, with David Luiz and Willian and Dani Alves, who, by the way, still is looking for a club now that his contract has also been finished. So maybe they can all be reunited together.
You know what? I had an idea. What if we bought Derby County, signed Dani Alves and Paulinho,
got
Wayne Rooney to dust off the old boots and help us out?
Yeah,
and
that's an idea.
You think we could keep him up?
I'm thinking we give
after the 21-point penalty? We certainly have a go. Julian Nagelsmann, who likes to think outside the box, has suggested in an interview that at some point we might be putting microphones on players' jerseys so that they can receive detailed instructions directly from the bench during games. Jules,
really?
Is this the future?
Really? It's like what? Formula One? Like
no, he says, well, they do it in the NFL, which, by the way, I think in the NFL, it's only the middle linebacker and the quarterback. But
Yeah, I think you got that one confused there, too. I mean, why would you want to do this? What?
So you can shout, man on, man on. I don't know.
Exactly. But like, what? I mean, this one, I'm all for innovation, as you know. I'm open-minded. We can try things. But this one, really? This one. Thank you. A sad day, though, Gab, as one of the greatest players in the history of the English game of English football, Jimmy Greaves, has passed away, Gab, on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he lived a full life. I always find it remarkable. You and I both are foreigners who live in this country. I always find it weird how this country's so obsessed with the past and tradition on certain things, but not on other things. Jimmy Greaves, again, 357 top-flight goals. If you look at, by far the most, I think only Gerd Müller has scored more he passed Gerd. Only Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi have scored more top-flight goals. He's just ahead of Gerd Müller. And he retired, I think, when he was 31 years old. He's just a phenomenal, phenomenal footballer. Played for Chelsea, played for Spurs, played briefly for Milan as well. Mm. Didn't like it there. Got homesick, came home. Should have been in the team that won the World Cup in 1966. Had an injury, maybe some dispute about whether he should have been starting or lost his place. Absolutely phenomenal. And yet, this is a guy who a couple years after that World Cup victory in the early 70s, he was making a living selling vegetables on a stand.
Yeah.
Major bout with alcoholism, alcoholism, came back. And I wonder, why isn't he Sir Jimmy Greaves?
I was going to say, please make him Sir.
Why isn't he celebrated more?
I don't know.
You know,
when they put
those stupid rankings, when they're like, oh, like, you know, Mo Salah is now in the top 10 of Premier League scores. He's not, but whatever, right? And like, hello, there was football before that. To give you a sense of how ridiculously good this is, if you look at the list of all-time top-flight scorers, I think Alan Shearer is number 6 or something.
Mm.
The other 5 dudes in between Greaves and Shearer, they all played before World War II, when the game was completely different and matches finished 8-7 and whatever. This guy was just unbelievable.
I mean, 41 goal a season, 37 goal a season. He almost has a goal per game, I think, at Spurs in the whole time they were
there. And his scoring record for England, 44 goals in
55 or 57
matches. I'm an unbelievable player.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're paying attention now that he's gone. He reinvented himself later, became a famous television show host for a while, a show called St. Greavesy. He'll be missed. And I hope this invites people to take a little more care when looking at the players who came before and who helped build the game in this country and around the world. Right, that brings us to an end, Jules, but shall we come back and do this again on Thursday?
Yeah.
All right, we'll see how things work out for Paris Saint-Germain.
Yes.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.